And proceed with the next case. The United States versus John Lakes.
May it please the court.
Ms. I hear you sitting here. Ms. Christensen.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. I am Joanna Christensen, and I represent Appellant John Lakes in this matter. The step that Mr. Lakes is asking this court to take is the logical extension of the journey that the Sentencing Commission, Supreme Court, and this court has already started through 5G 1.3, 5K 2.23, and then, of course, the application notes to 5G 1.3. The district court found that Mr. Lakes' previous state sentence was related to the federal offense and, however, found that it could not give him any credit on the federal sentence because the state sentence had been discharged and did not result in an enhancement in his guideline range. As is detailed in our brief, in every other circumstance, Mr. Lakes could possibly have received a lower sentence. It's not a guarantee, of course, particularly after Booker, where the guidelines are only advisory, but it's a possibility. The district court, in finding that it wasn't a possibility, made an error in not considering it and violated Mr. Lake's due process rights. He's part of that category that the government thinks will overwhelm the sentencing guidelines and the courts, but is actually a very small subset of categories already existing within the guidelines. Even further toward the due process argument is the fact that if Mr. Lakes had been serving his sentence and even was scheduled to be released the day after his federal sentencing, that he could have, under the guidelines, gotten a credit.
Credit for what?
A credit for the state sentence that he was serving.
Well, only for what had not yet been served, though, right?
What had been served. What had not been served, even if it was one day, could be, if I'm remembering this correctly, concurrent to the federal sentence. I believe that's the way it worked.
Isn't that how you get credit, though?
In some situations, it is how you get credit. If you're going to be detained in a different jurisdiction while the federal sentence is pending, concurrent sentences is the way to order it. If you have already served time, the credit is the way to get that reduction in the sentence.
Yeah, I guess I don't understand what's already served because I thought it's undischarged that you can maybe get credit for, depending on what the sentencing judge wants to.
If it's undischarged,
yeah.
Yes. Yes.
But what about discharged?
If it's discharged, you can get credit, and if it's discharged, 5K 2.23 is the provision that allows the district court to at least consider it.
Well, that's a kind of a long shot, though, isn't it? Isn't that sort of an unusual circumstance when that would apply?
That guideline or guideline section is worded as such as an unusual circumstance. I think our difficulty is that it is a possibility and something that can be argued. And the way the district court found in this case that Mr. Lakes couldn't even make the argument. And under the guidelines as they are currently written, strictly construed, he can't make the argument. And that's where our issue comes in. That he is similarly situated to each one of these other defendants, as I've kind of called them A, B, C, and D in my brief. And it's merely timing about when his sentence was discharged and when he was prosecuted for the federal offense. Excuse me. And that's the only difference.
When you say related, do you mean a similar type of crime?
No, it's actually taken into account in relevant conduct.
So it's already been... So it's used, I guess. It's not just there. I thought that wasn't.
Right.
I didn't know that was the case here.
The state crime was unlawful use of a credit card, and what he did was purchase a computer with one of these credit cards that had been skimmed.
I see.
Is my understanding. And the computer was worth about $1,300, and he was prosecuted in state court and served 6 months for that offense. It actually happened during the same time as the federal offense, and was related. Although it's unclear from the record whether it was specifically listed because there were so many credit cards found.
Yeah.
It could have been in the discovery, but of course that's not in the record on appeal, all of it. It wasn't specifically indicated in the pre-sentence report, but at sentencing, the government and probation agreed, and the judge agreed, that that sentence had been taken into account. The problem is that the way the guidelines were written at the time, unless it resulted in an enhancement, 5G didn't automatically apply. And that had been, of course, a change. It didn't used to have to result in an enhancement. It could just be part of relevant conduct. So as part of this, we're also, of course, the second argument is whether the sentence is unreasonable based on the district court's refusal to consider this and the court's specific consideration of mostly Mr. Lakes' criminal history and very little else in 3553A. Of course, we are more than aware that this court gives a presumption of reasonableness to a sentence within the guideline range. And acknowledge that, and also acknowledge that the Supreme Court has taken the issue, granted cert on the issue last week, and that no one knows what can happen in the Supreme Court would possibly affect this case.
Do you know what the question is on cert?
There are actually two cases on cert in Rita versus United States. The question, I believe that's the case where the defendant got a much lower than guideline sentence, and the government has appealed, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And the other case, which is Claiborne from the Eighth Circuit, is whether a presumption of reasonableness for a guideline sentence is appropriate.
That's our pronouncement.
And cert was granted on November 3rd, which was, of course, last Friday in those two cases.
Okay. Well, I guess that's an issue we'll obviously keep an eye on.
Right, and we're certainly making no promises about how it'll affect this case. I would like to add that if the court is inclined to affirm based on the presumption of reasonableness, that the court should probably hold this case until the Supreme Court makes a decision. Of course, if the court is inclined to reverse on the first issue, then Mr. Lakes would go for resentencing, and then when the Supreme Court issues cases, those can be considered.
It's a long way off, but...
It is a long way off.
Yeah.
You never predict the Supreme Court. So I see I'm in my rebuttal time. Preserve the rest of the time.
We preserve the rest of the time. Okay. Rosalie?
May it please the court, my name is Chris Hotelling, and I represent the United States in this appeal. I'd like to first clarify something that was raised during counsel's argument with respect to the state crime and what impact that state crime either had or did not have at sentencing. Counsel is correct that the state crime was for unlawful use of a credit card. That was an offense that was charged in 2003. However, and it was very clear both in the record during the sentencing hearing as well as in the PSI, that the underlying offense was not included as relevant conduct in the offense to which the district court made its guideline determinations. The only impact that the prior state court conviction had with respect to the guidelines is that both the parties, the pretrial services and the government agreed that the defendant should not get any criminal history points for that prior state court offense, because it was a credit card offense that arguably occurred within the time frame of the charge conspiracy. But nevertheless, there was no argument. In fact, the government specifically argued that that particular offense was not relevant conduct and was not being considered as an element of the underlying guideline determination of the district court. So in fact, the defendant actually got a benefit because that other state offense was not included. He did not get any criminal history points. It did not increase him from one particular criminal history category to another category, and also potentially bump him up into another range based on his criminal history. So he actually got the benefit of that by the district court not imposing a criminal history point. But just to make sure it's clear, that particular conviction was not relevant conduct. And in fact, was one of the principal reasons why the district court did not find that the undischarged, excuse me, that, that 5G 1.3 applied. Now, obviously, it's a bit of an unusual circumstance to be discussing a downward departure provision, as Judge Evans earlier, during one of the earlier arguments, indicated that the guidelines, that the downward departure provisions are now essentially obsolete, and what this district, what the court is required to consider is whether or not the sentence is reasonable. Nevertheless, the issue presented to the court is in the context of 5G 1.3, despite the fact that there's been tendered or that are essentially obsolete. And what we're faced with is a constitutional due process challenge to 5G 1.3. This idea of discharged versus undischarged terms of imprisonment, and how the Sentencing Commission has provided downward departure mechanisms in both of those circumstances. The underlying gist of defendant's argument is that there is a small subset of defendants who have a discharge term of imprisonment that do not have the same benefits or the same opportunities to have a downward departure mechanism as those similarly situated for undischarged terms of imprisonment. The government's position, as it's stated in the brief, is that that's taking the due process analysis way too far. The guidelines very clearly provide downward departure mechanisms for both defendants with discharged terms of imprisonment as well as defendants with discharged terms of imprisonment. Both categories of defendants are treated, and both of them have an opportunity for downward departure. This, where the defendant quibbles is the fact that there is a small range of potential defendants, those who have a discharge term of imprisonment and whose prior conviction does not satisfy the other components of 5G 1.3b. For that very limited category of defendants, there is no explicit downward departure mechanism.
Well, what's an example of that?
Well, I think you have to consider it using the defendant as an example.
Well, he's got a prior conviction.
He has a prior discharge term of incarceration, mm-hmm. but his prior discharge term does not apply to 5G 1.3b, which requires both that the conduct be considered relevant conduct and, two, that the underlying offense increased his offense level. And that's the situation that we have for the defendant. His prior discharge term of incarceration did not increase his offense level. And that's what the finding that the district court made. But going back to it, it's this idea that the Sentencing Commission is required to carve out downward departure mechanisms for every single conceivable category of defendant takes the due process analysis way too far. And that's where, you know, we feel that the, or at least the government feels that the due process clause challenge should fall and should fail. Not only that, but, you know, this was an argument that was raised for the first time on appeal, so it's subject to plain error analysis. So not only does the due process clause argument fail because of the error, just because of it fails on the constitutional grounds, but also there is no perceived prejudice that the defendant will face as a result of as a result of this perceived constitutional violation. There's a reference to Application Note 3E, which does provide for undischarged terms of imprisonment an additional means by which a downward departure could be obtained if the underlying offense is extraordinary and, B, that the defendant served a substantial amount of time. Those factors outlined in Application Note 3E are not applicable in this case. So the defendant wouldn't even be entitled to the type of relief that he was asking for if every type of conceivable downward departure that applies to undischarged terms of imprisonment also were to apply to the defendant's category of discharged terms of imprisonment.
Is discharged mean served, or is it something different?
It means a completed served term of imprisonment, and that's so, what was in the. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess that I was sort of looking at, maybe reading it wrong, is that if you served most of a term, what's not discharged is the balance of it. But apparently that's not the way it's defined.
Well, using this as an example, the defendant says he was supposed to get a 6-month term. He should get a 6-month credit. Well, that 6 month was served in 2004. It was completed by 2004. He wasn't sentenced until December 2005, a year and a half later. What he's saying is that I should get credit for those periods of months that I served in custody in state court on arguably related charge. That should inure to my benefit at my sentencing a year and a half down the line.
But the crimes were ongoing during his incarceration?
Well, actually,
on that 6 months time?
No. It was a revocation on a prior offense, and he actually went into custody to serve an additional term of imprisonment. The offense conduct for that state offense did take place within the scope of the charge scheme.
I see.
However, it was already satisfied, and it essentially had already been charged prior to even being indicted on the case. There was a criminal complaint that was working its way through the system, and then an indictment came in April of 2004. And my belief is, as I remember it, he was actually had already served it by the time he appeared for his arraignment on the federal offense. And just very, very briefly, it's the government's position that this court should continue to follow its precedents with respect to the presumption of reasonableness. We do not think that this case should be stayed. If Your Honor, if the court is inclined to affirm on a presumption of reasonableness grounds, to the extent that their Supreme Court decides to do something on that issue, the parties can appear before the court and file Rule 54 statements to address any impact of the Supreme Court's decision. So the government respectfully requests that the sentence of the defendant be affirmed. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your Honors, I first we'll talk about the relatedness of this offense, and the government seems to want it both ways. They want to call it related for criminal history and let him have that, but won't let it be related for the purposes of 5G 1.3 or any credit thereafter. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense if the offense happened during the scheme and was part of the scheme. Secondly, the district court did not specifically hold that it wasn't relevant conduct. The district court said that it didn't result in an enhancement, which is a different analysis, of course. In a lot of these cases, and it's usually either money or drugs, it's part of a bigger scheme, but it may not necessarily be enough to bump up someone's offense level. And finally, Mr. Lake's not arguing for a downward departure. We actually have not mentioned downward departure aside from where it's relevant in the guidelines. We're arguing that the district court should have considered, as part of a post-Booker sentencing, this factor that he spent time in jail on a related offense and had served that time by the time the government decided to prosecute him. The government's delay or process in prosecuting someone should not result in a punishment to the defendant. If the government had prosecuted him earlier, like I said in the brief, if he'd been still serving that, he would have been entitled to at least consideration of a credit on his sentence. And finally, regarding holding the case in pending the Supreme Court, I think it's up to this panel whether to do that. If, of course, this case is decided, we'll file a cert petition and it'll be held pending opinion in the Supreme Court. So there are other avenues if this court does not want to wait for the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Unless the court has further questions, I would ask that the court remand for resentencing in this case.
Okay, thanks. This case will be taken under advisement.